did you find this?
I only ended up winning, I think, $15.
That fucking sucks.
And I put that down as a down payment on this new computer.
That's not even the taxes.
No, it costs $15 to walk into Best Buy now, actually.
Dude, Best Buy is so depressing. Like, they have that, what I call the gauntlet, like a shopping does at the end. But, like, mine, it's all the tech shit. And it's like, here's the gauntlet, but it's empty. It's like 2002 or 2022 baseball cards, half an empty carton of, like, pretzels and chips and shit. No batteries. Candy. And like, four candy bars, and then some weirdo iced teas that I've never heard of. I'm like, I think these have, like, asbestos in them.
Yeah, there's the fucking Funko Pops at the register, and you're like, what the fuck is this?
Dude, as someone who collects, like, vinyl-related things, a Funko Pop makes me want to put a gun in my mouth.
We're starting hot, episode 128, Funko Pop suicides.
It's been a week, bro.
Who's the comic that does the joke about? He's like, we can't have B batteries because he'd walk around just saying the batteries.
I don't know. But that's solid. That's solid.
It was someone from the joke was probably 15, 20 years old. Someone we used to listen to at school.
So Ryan's back from injury list. Shane's back from week from hell.
I got OJ'd.
Oh shit!
He did it. I didn't do anything. I'm in the exact same spot I was last week, so nothing's new for me.
Hey, he can rest easy, though, because he did find the killer of Nicole Brown Simpson, so.
Yeah.
I don't remember that.
It all shook out in the end. The New Jack promo is still my favorite, when he was wrestling in the Deep South, and he was like, shout out to my man OJ Simpson. Two less we got to worry about. Keep up the good work.
I will say, though, like, celebrity deaths like OJ really let me choose or let me understand who I want in my life, right? Because everybody who was riffing on that piece of shit immediately, I was like, you're cool. And then some people are like, we should wait. And I was like, there's no such thing as reverence. Dude, if my fucking... Do not let my body go cold before you start making fun of me.
Right? When my grandpa passed, like, less than a minute later, we were laughing because he kept being like, yeah, I'm going to get up and pee. And we're like, dude, you can't move. And he's like, nah, who has to know? We're fine. And so, like, he ended up passing, like, a minute later. And we were like, this fucking asshole. Like, right up until the end is like, I'm going to pull out these tubes and go take a piss. Even though he had a catheter in, like, he could have just gone.
He ended up did pissing, though, so good for him. He did accomplish his goal.
But, like, you have to, it's death. It's a part of life, man. You have to, like, it's not the sacred thing.
Especially a motherfucker you don't know. You know what I mean? Like, literally a person who never knew you existed. Right? Like, who gives a shit?
OJ Simpson was a bad dude. It's okay.
We can joke. Dude. OJ had secrets on too many wealthy people. That's why he's in the ground.
OJ Simpson didn't kill himself.
The vaccine did.
All right. So 128, Ryan, start us off. Let's go.
All right, guys, we're going to talk about a more recent tight end coming up today. Someone from the heart of America in Arkansas. We're going to talk about Mr. Charles Clay.
Oh, right? Okay. Yeah, hell yeah.
Yeah. Nothing too crazy you got about this guy's personal life. He's a good, solid Christian player. Family's part of the Christian faith. So there's obviously not too much about him in terms of his personal life. But this man was 6'3", 246 pounds. He, as I said, he is from Arkansas. He went to Little Rock Central High School.
Okay.
And he was, at the time, the 13th overall prospect for the state of Arkansas. And actually started his career as fullback / halfback. And he did that a lot in college too. He ended up going to the University of Tulsa as a business major. Started playing halfback and fullback, and they use him as like a passing threat too. Throughout his college career, let's see, 189 receptions for 2,500 plus yards, a 13.5 average. He had 28 receiving touchdowns. He had 10 rushing touchdowns, 911 yards on 179 attempts.
Damn.
Yeah. They use him everywhere on the field. And naturally, this caught the attention of scouts and stuff when it was coming up to the NFL draft, which was, he was drafted in, I think, 2011. Yeah, 2011. I don't know what happened to his draft stock, but he ended up going 174th overall in the sixth round. So whatever, maybe it was combine or something, he ended up getting drafted to the Dolphins. Didn't do too well in his rookie year. He only had like 230 yards, three touchdowns. And his second year, too, only 212 yards and two touchdowns.
All right, real quick. I got to ask you, his relative athletic score, his RAS, I have it. What is Charles Clay's RAS?
Can we go under or over?
Let's do 7.5 RAS, over or under.
I'm going under.
I'm going to say over.
It was an 8.81.
I thought it was going to be like a 3.8.
That's funny. So anyways, he did all right in Miami. Yeah, his third season, he started to get a lot better. He finished that season with 759 yards, six touchdowns, and had even some rushing yards and a rushing touchdown.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. And then his fourth season, he got injured and didn't play as much. And then I think Miami had enough of him and he got traded to Buffalo, where he had a better career. And actually, he's the first Bills tight end with back-to-back seasons of 50 or more receptions and 500 receiving yards.
Damn.
You guys know that?
All right, Dalton Kincaid. Don't let us down.
Yeah, I mean, that guy's going to, as long as Allen stays healthy, that guy's going to probably break that record. But he's also got the most consecutive games with one or more receiving touchdowns by a Bill, three, by a Bills tight end, sorry.
Solid.
He then went on to sign a one-year contract with Arizona Cardinals, and he was done after that year. All in all, he played like eight seasons, almost 4,000 yards receiving. He was not used as much in the rushing game like he was in college and high school, so he didn't end up with too many rushing yards. And over that time, an eight-year span as a receiver, I think it's pretty cool that he only fumbled four times.
Wow.
Okay.
Yeah.
Solid.
Yeah. Out of, let's see, he played 127 games. And he had 357 receptions. So he only fumbled four times out of the 357 times that he caught the ball. That's pretty cool. But yeah, interesting life of Charles Clay, who's a really good tight end with the Bills. But just like most tight ends, gets muffled under the carpet sometimes. And people got to remember him, talk about him.
So I got something for you while you were telling that story. I was like, damn, he's used all over the field. He's doing this, doing that. I was like, he's like Jaheim Bell, right? And so Charles Clay's RAS was 8.8. Jaheim Bell's is 8.5. They are both 6'2", and they weigh within 4 pounds of each other.
A clone.
There it is. So Jaheim Bell, Charles Clay, 1-to-1 clone. Book it.
Okay.
All right, so I got one. Let's do some history here. Part two, I did like a little two-parter. So part two of my dig into the origins of football is going to talk to us today about something called the Boston game. If you skip episodes, like if you only listen to the ones with Ryan in them, I would suggest going back and listening to part one, where I talked about the earliest origins of football and their development into a game called mob football.
It's really good.
Yeah, it was fun. So we're going to move on to the next major step in the game's evolution and hop to America during the 1860s, the swinging 60s, as they called them, you know, be swinging. America was balls deep in the Civil War, and some preppy white folks were about to take sports to a whole new level. In the 1800s, like, mob football had become more spread out, so college teams would have their own squads, and would play the game intercollegiately against either like other teams or against teams made up of other people on campus. Unsurprisingly, these games were insanely violent, and this would lead to eventual bans against all forms of football at Yale in 1860 and Harvard in 1861.
Nerds.
That's what I'm saying. So in order to fill the void, the games would be split between, like, the game itself would split into a different form of the game that focused more on, like, either kicking or running. So now we're going to enter the Oneida Football Club, which is not to be confused with the Oneida Community, which was a sex cult that ended up becoming the company that's made most of our silverware, which is true. You could look that up if you wanted.
Let's talk about that.
Dude, they were a sex cult that practiced free love, and they decided to run a business, and Oneida Silverware is fucking huge. And it started
Were the people involved in this? I mean, obviously a cult is not consensual to the maximum ability, but were all these people consenting adults?
Yes.
Okay, that's better.
Yep. So you have ethically fucked silverware. Anyways, so this Oneida Football Club was founded by a guy named Garrett Miller, and it was made up of a series of football players from the larger, like, Boston region. So I got some cool names for you guys. You ready?
Yep.
All right.
Winthrop S. Scudder.
Yes.
It's a good one. And the other one, there were a couple of decent ones. I went for the creme de la creme. So the best two were Winthrop S. Scudder and Huntington F. Walcott Dixwell.
Oh, hell yeah. Can you imagine putting that last name on a jersey?
There was also a guy on this team named Robert Lawrence who would go on to write a book that I ended up reading like a third of for this episode, where he talks about how important imagination is in the medicinal process.
Yeah, he's the great-great-grandma or grandpa of the Lawrence brothers.
There you go. The famous
Whoa.
Lawrence brothers. So this team whips ass. Legend has it that not only did they never lose a game, they never ceded a single point.
Damn.
They would even play shorthanded and still whip ass. And they were kind of like an AAU team, right? Like a travel team. And so with the popularity of this club, the game started getting steam again. And this game was more focused on kicking, but still contained some of the scrum elements of mob football as well. Some places would play more of what's like a soccer style, and then some play more a rugby style. And this made it hard to book games because even though the rules were sometimes similar, sometimes they were wildly different. So not only did you have to find a school that was willing to play against you, you had to find a school that played the same game as you.
Okay.
So of all the schools, Harvard had the hardest time finding opponents since their version was closer to rugby than soccer. But then they got an invite from Canada's McGill University Football Club. All right. Both want more of a rugby style competition. So in 1874, they agree to play a two-game meet, one under rugby rules and one under Boston rules. Now, this game turns out to be a blast for both teams, and there ends up becoming like a mashing of styles where some of the rules start to blend into each other.
I don't know why I thought the way you said mash, I thought you were going to say mash shooting, and I was like, dude, it never, ever ends.
I can't say I blame you for thinking that. So this was the first game to charge admission in the history of the sport known as football, either American or European. The Boston game is widely considered to be where the rugby elements get mixed with the soccer elements to change the form as rugby starts to take over for soccer on some of these Ivy League campuses across America and then some in Canada. So the 1870s had a couple high-profile rugby games, and this spawned something called the Intercollegiate Football Association. Now, the IFA forms all the rugby teams into one league and decide to, like, all right, we're making this a thing. They pretty much copy the rugby rules from England, but put in some of the new stuff where, like, running the ball into a goal is worth more points than simply kicking the ball through a goal. Harvard originally was like, we don't want to do this. We want to play the Boston game. But eventually they fall in line, and this became the way things were organized going forward. And we're going to end today with Walter Camp, who was the captain for the Yale football team and is now considered the father of American football. Check this dude shit out. Ready? I'm going to bring the number of players down per side from 15 to 11.
We talked about this guy. Remember when I did My Connecticut episode? Are we, yep. I think we talked about this, yeah.
We did, we did. He invented the, we talked about this, we invented the center to quarterback snap.
Yeah, that's right, that's right.
He also proposed the wacky idea to give a team three tries to advance the ball 5 yards in order to continue to move down the field. He also invented the line of scrimmage.
That's right.
So instead of a scrum, like where the ball, where the play dies, and the ball is stopped, and then the scrimmage line is established, whereas before it was like that's where the next scrum starts. So that's Walter Camp, that's the Boston game, and that's my little two-part miniseries on the origins of football.
What a way to start.
Yeah, just fucking throwing pig's bladders all over the place.
I wrote some notes from this week of news for some wackity smackity shit I saw. AJ Brown is apparently a flat earther.
Yeah, he's what? A flat Marser or some shit too, no. Right?
Yeah, he was like, how do we not see, or he's like, what do you say, can we not see the eclipse from space? And everyone's like, that's not how planets work. Jordan Addison is on his Sigma grind set with Andrew Tate posting.
Yep, he's Tate posting, all right.
And then I saw Jim Harbaugh today on the Chargers social media that looked like he had the biggest butt plug up his ass because he looked so uncomfortable. Walker tweeted that, and the way the tweet read, you guys have seen Step Brothers, right? With Will Ferrell and
yes.
John C. Reilly.
Yeah.
You remember the scene where in their tuxedos and talking to Seth Rogen, and then he like rips ass, and then he's like, like this is kind of like a fucked up idea now that I think about it.
Yeah.
So I've come to be on the opposite side of the Chargers social media website now because I saw that tweet and I was like, this is like kind of shitty. This is like trying too hard to be cool.
Yeah. Chargers social media, I think that was an L.
I mean, when Corn Dick Nerd comes to town, right, it's just all the mysticism leaves.
That Chargers team is going to be the most awful 9-8 team in the league next year. I'm telling you right now.
Are you guys ready for me to bitch about Greg Roman for the next 3 years?
Two, if we're lucky. Just give Justin Herbert all this money and whatever. I still think Herbie's going to do just fine. I think his numbers will go down, but I think his efficiency will go up.
Someone's got to score, right? Someone's got to score.
Did you know that Charles Clay had his first career reception against the San Diego Chargers?
What?
Damn. And I'm starting to realize like a pattern too when I'm looking up a lot of these guys. A lot of these guys like first plays or first touchdown or something. It seems like it's like 70% always against the Chargers. I don't know why.
That's the meme. Every time I watch a highlight tape, I'm like, there we are. There we are getting shine.
Yep. Hey, don't worry. There'll be Bears getting painted on all of Aaron Rodgers' retirement videos.
I just want his head. I just want his head to explode.
It will from the vaccine. So we need to really unpack this week, you guys. We got some talking to do about Darren Waller because our did Darren Waller retire yet segment is popping off this week. Can I start with the news?
Yeah.
Yeah, I want to know.
Giants Darren Waller told Vic Taffer that he's still undecided on if he wants to play or retire from the NFL. Waller knows the Giants would probably want a decision before the draft, but he doesn't want to put a deadline on himself. That's per The Atlantic.
Good for him.
I love it. Make everyone wait.
Yeah, right? What an asshole. just retire and let Bellinger cook.
No, okay. Right. Before we talk Brock,
because then they're gonna draft Brock Bowers
at six. I'm seeing it, yeah. Dude. We'll talk about it when we talk about Brock Bowers. But I watched that man play, and I was like, he's a Giant. They're gonna reach.
In other recent Darren Waller news, he got some face tattoos since the end of the season too. One is the word Serenity on his forehead. You know, and we all know Darren Waller is a former addict. And I guess. Serenity is kind of common in like
AA type stuff.
Common in that. Yeah. He also got just a king's crown, like on his temple.
If you're getting a crown tattooed, bro, you got to get the whole fucking crown of your head tattooed, right?
Because he said the king's crown is more just like an affirmation. That's a quote from Darren Waller.
He is affirmed. He is a king. Hell yeah. And he's still undecided.
He also has a balance beam, like from gymnastics, so he can keep his life in balance to remind him, you know. I don't know about you, but I don't need a tattoo to remind me to keep my life balanced.
I'm just saying, man, maybe like we should not give everybody a tattoo gun. It's like the same thing. Not everybody should have a microphone talking to a podcast, because like Godspeed for that person who took his money, but someone to sit down and be like, that's a sick idea, dude.
Then you know what though? Like the quote unquote, my tattoos need to be like something to help me remember or whatever. Not about it. Like, look, just say like, hey, I wanted this because I thought a balance beam would look fucking cool tattooed.
Right. Yeah. Now. I saw a tweet today, or not tweet, a post from one of the tattoo artists that I've gotten artwork from on me. And they're like, oh, I got a custom to remember their grandpa. And it was just a fedora with the word Papa written in the middle of it. I was like, I'm not going back to you because that shit sucks.
I mean, like, if you want it to mean something, like, cool. I have tattoos that mean stuff to me. But, like, I'm not going to put anything on me that looks fucking stupid. I don't know.
Hey, I got some dumb tattoos. But, like, to sit there and validate and be like, hey, this balance beam. Like, what the fuck does a balance beam? Balance beam is just a cross, right?
Yes.
Uh-huh. I'll tell you like Jesus, dog.
Yeah. Weak.
Another thing that sucks about us finding out if he will retire or not is Darren Waller has recently ditched his iPhone for a flip phone because he no longer wants to be a part of social media. So we will most likely not be seeing a tweet, you know, saying I'm retired. This is gonna take a while. He's gonna play this out, and it's gonna suck.
You know who does that kind of shit, dude? I know an old vendor of mine who went like beeper mode in 2019 before the shit hit the fan. But that dude was the most batshit insane conspiracy theorist, like Michelle Obama's a reptile type mentality, where like anybody who's like, I need a flip phone, I'm like, you just got bad opinions.
Usually I feel that. And look, dude, you could just hang on. Here's this thing. It's called deleting the app.
Right. Right, or just don't click on it. You have fingers. Like, don't like, go there.
It's the Tyler the Creator cyberbullying tweet where he's like, just don't look at the screen.
Yeah, just turn it off. You can do that.
On some positive Darren Waller news though. he did meet in Vegas and with Jatavion Sanders and Cade Stover to kind of shadow them and go over some drills and give They're some doomed. Like NFL mentorship.
They're doomed. You know how he's not doing Brock Bowers though? He's like, I can't make sure this guy takes my job.
No. Well, Brock Bowers probably said no.
I'm good.
He's
thanks.
Like, he's like, I'm gonna be better than you, so sorry.
Well, let's do it. Let's talk Brock Bowers. And like Shane, you've alluded to a couple times, so why don't you start?
Can we start? He's not a tight end.
No,
yeah,
he's a wide receiver.
Yeah, he's such a versatile player.
I want to get this out the front, dude. I am tired of the fucking Todd Monken corked up white boy screen and jet sweep. I don't ever want to see that shit ever again in my entire life. I've saw that so many times with Ladd McConkey and so many times with Brock Bowers. Granted, Brock Bowers housed it every other play, but I don't want to see that shit anymore. But yeah, Brock Bowers. I need to see landing spot, but he could be my wide receiver 3.
Okay. Yeah. Hey, man, I've been saying since February, the hardest decision pre-draft in terms of, like, dynasty rookie drafts is Roma Dunze or Brock Bowers.
And, like, we'll get into game 3 real quick, but, like, it just depends how your league values tight end premium. Like, unless he's going to be getting, like, 12 targets a game, you kind of maybe want to wait just a little bit.
Right.
But go ahead, Ryan. This is your boy, so I'm going to let you have the floor.
Sure. Like Shane said, he's like on that brink of being a wide receiver. They schemed him so well in his college career. He lined up in the slot or outside 1,033 snaps compared to in line as an actual tight end, only 876 snaps.
Yep. He can do both.
Yeah. So this guy's going to be really good. Yeah, he won the tight end trophy.
The Mackey.
Gosh darn it. Yeah, he won that 2 years in a row. Since the Mackey Award has been around, that has never happened by any tight end ever.
Right.
I mean, it's only like a 20 or 30 year sample, but still, first guy to ever win it two times in a row. And like Shane said, I'm really intrigued to see where this guy ends up, and I just hope he doesn't end up. I don't know.
I saw a tweet this week that said if Brock Bowers goes to a place with no competition, he's guaranteed lock for top six tight end finish. And I think it's an undersell. I think he could finish top four.
Yeah. It's gonna be like that situation with Laporta. If he goes to a team that has a need for a second wide receiver, like Detroit had the need last year, he's gonna have a Laporta year.
This is Josh Reynolds erasure.
I mean, this guy is like if Sam Laporta, Gronk, Kelsey, and Kittle all in one player.
The only knock I really have on him that I saw is his contested catchability isn't like elite. It's good, but like he gets jammed up in contested catches or like on heavy coverages. But
sure. Yeah,
you can't be perfect. You know what I mean? I still want the player, but that was like the one like knock that I saw as well. Like 2023, I know he was pretty banged up and he had some fumbles. But I mean, it happens when you're like literally the entire offense. But yeah, watching him play, I was like, I don't blame teams for like basing their entire offensive scheme on him. Like if the Giants did it at six, yeah, you could take Neighbors. But if Neighbors is gone at that point, you can play this player as an alpha and still be successful.
Sure. Yep.
Yeah, and just like he's good at catching and stuff, he's also pretty good at blocking too. So that's going to keep defenses guessing all the time when he's on the field, whether he's going to be blocking or running a route.
Yep.
And I know this is college too. You know, he's playing college defenses, but last year he averaged 2.64 yards per route run and 8.5 yards after the catch. All right. So that would have been first among all NFL tight ends. From last year's sample.
I think it's a good example, though. Like, when we watch Bijan, right? Bijan, we were watching a guy, and we were saying the same thing. We know it's college, but it also looks like this human being is just beating up on JV-caliber defense, even though...
Right. It's like superhuman, yeah.
And Georgia played in the hardest division, and I love him. He's great. I don't have, like... I think I was more mad at fucking Stetson Bennett for like messing up the sickest route he ever ran in Mississippi. And some other things. Where I was like, he hit like a double back and then like a go. And I was like, holy shit, that was crisp. But yeah, Stetson Bennett sucks.
Hopefully with whatever NFL team he does end up on to gets him in a good like health and, it's still like a health program because he does have some lingering injuries. He was dealing with that foot thing all last year.
He refused to like, he had tightrope surgery and he only was out for 2 weeks.
Right. That's crazy.
That's right. He came back like the game before the championship game or something like that.
Yeah. It's a four week injury. And he came back in two and was like, no, I'm playing.
Yeah, so he needs to work on staying healthy too, because if he doesn't stay healthy, this could be a horrible waste of talent.
All right, let me give you my Brock Bowers shit. He's perfect. He blocks, huge catch radius, walking, breathing, living mismatch. Too strong for defensive backs, too fast for linebackers. Breaks tackles. He gives the quarterback his numbers real fast. Like he turns back to the quarterback like rapid. Elite ball tracking, yards after the catch is great, catches on the sidelines, has great awareness of the first down marker. Now, here's the thing, Shane. You talk about game theory, and I see the ceiling with the Dunze, or Neighbors, or however you know you call it your own way, but if you have Rome over Neighbors, you're objectively wrong. Anyways.
Waleed.
Anyways, my thought is, like, I see the ceiling there, but at the same time, Brock Bowers is a dude that could be like a set it and forget it TE1 for the next 6 to 8 years.
So right. The question with that is, right, is I think it comes down to how you evaluate tight end. Like, what is the maximum amount of you would ever pay for Travis Kelce? Like, say 2 years ago, or 3 years ago, right, when he was still like a top asset, he wasn't, every year we get closer to, he's got to be falling off soon. And like, but you didn't know that he was going to keep playing for four more years in the league level, right? Like, What is the combination of picks or pick you would give away for a player like that?
Mid first, early second, like together, paired together.
So like 107, 106 plus like
201.
20, yeah.
Yeah.
Wait, Shane, you've experimented with some rookie drafts, I'm sure, already. Where's like Brock Bowers going?
Right now, he's like 106, 107, 108. So it's okay. Right now, sleeper's kind of fucked up, in my opinion, where it's there's no breaks after tier or like the first two tiers. So it goes Marv, Caleb, Neighbors, Daniels, May, Odunze, and Bowers. And you can like flip the last three together, but like that's pretty much like the lock of where sleeper has ADP. But obviously, we're approaching the draft, like the people who are, I'm probably fucking up ADP myself because I'm probably like one of nine people mocking right now. But as of right now, he can go anywhere from 105 to 108. It's going to depend where he goes. Like, I think if he goes to the Jets, I think his draft stock is going to fall a little bit because like
really?
Even me, I mean, I don't know, dude, like that franchise is cursed. Aaron Rodgers has what, a year left?
Yeah.
Yeah. They're cursed with tight ends.
And they showed they cannot develop a quarterback or pick a quarterback. So I feel like they're just doomed to purgatory. I don't know. That's just my cynicism.
Okay. Sure.
So it's Tennessee, Atlanta, Chicago. Atlanta would be the funniest landing spot ever.
Oh my God. Please no.
Chicago, the Jets, Minnesota. They're going to trade for quarterback. Denver. I could see him in Denver, right?
If they want Jared Stidham week one, sure.
I think they're going to have to, man, But who are they going to, what are they going to give up? Like Sean Payton doesn't want to rebuild. Going to have to trade up. And unless JJ McCarthy falls to where you think he should fall. I don't know, man.
They're going to sign a dual partnership with Amazon Prime Vision. And Ryan Fitzpatrick is going to play four games for the Denver Broncos this year. Unlike rental.
Oh, so, hell yeah.
My player comp for Brock Bowers was Mark Andrews.
Mine was there is no, nothing compares.
Snail Connor.
I said the real Cooper Kupp.
Whoa.
Oh shit.
Not Ladd McConkey Cooper Kupp. Brock Bowers and Cooper Kupp.
I have him as my fifth highest rated player in this class.
That sounds about right. Sure.
All right. So let's move on. Let's talk running backs real quick.
Okay, we could talk wide receivers next.
I mean, yeah, because like Dejean Edwards, anybody?
He's gonna be a good backup somewhere. He's not gonna start anywhere. My player comp is one of those, you know, like third down backs, like
Samaje Perine,
yeah, or like Amir Abdullah or something like that.
Mine was Josh Kelly.
I wrote down, holy shit, a route and a check down guy. Thank fucking God.
Yep. Right.
Yep.
But he's just going to be a good backup third down back somewhere. He never even got a full workload as like a starter in college. So
yeah, he's a committee back for sure. The next level, someone's going to pick him up in the sixth. And if he makes the team, he's going to be either running back three or potentially running back two. Fucking Ty Chandler, part two.
Golf league champion, dude. Let's go.
There you go. I got nothing on. I got really nothing else on him. If we want to move to Cody Schrader.
Yeah, I'm good to move on to him.
Cody Schrader, relative athletic score, 3.01.
That fucking sucks.
I just wrote down that he's a good blocker and good footwork, but there's a lot he needs to develop. He's just short. He's got some beef though. He's 5'9", like 215 pounds.
Yeah.
For someone that's 5'9", that's a little bit of beef. But I mean, his tape kind of looked good. He's playing for Missouri though.
Wasn't he the leading rusher in the CFL?
He was in the SEC, I think.
Yeah, I think Missouri's in the SEC. I think you're right.
They don't play in Canada.
Sorry, I mean it's college football. My bad.
I will say this. I actually wrote in there, Schrader has moments, but he's a case study in how much production from a running back comes from the running back versus how the scheme and blocking works in his favor.
Okay.
Yeah.
I felt like the best things I saw came from good blocking.
Did you see how every single time he ran to the line, he always fell out of bounds or his balance always knocked him out? Where I'm like, hey, man, the line's bad. The line's bad.
Sure.
He hits second gear pretty quick, but then he goes to like 1.5. It's really bizarre how he like reaches his max speed and slowly speeds down.
Yep.
The only other thing I wrote down about him was like he's like an identical back to like in terms of like measurements, and even they had the same 40 time, him and Tyler Allgeier, exact same 40 time, you know, stats are pretty on par.
I wrote, but he's the USFL Blake Corum. He's going to rule in the USFL, dude.
He could. My player comparison was Tyler Beatty, and not a good way. All right.
Tyler Batty.
Yeah. Yeah. He's bad, folks. Let's talk about Brendan Rice. Ryan, what do you think? Give me your Brendan Rice stuff.
He's not going to be your standout wide receiver. He's not going to go to a team and be that number one elusive, awesome wide receiver. He's just going to be a good complement to whatever team, a good two or three, whatever team he ends up. Because he only, like, from what I saw, he, like, mainly just lines up outside. He doesn't even line up in, like, the slot or anything like that. Not too much explosiveness. He's 6'2", 208, so I wrote down, like, Van Jefferson.
Okay.
Because sure. Van Jefferson's just, like, you know, a guy. He's not the elite guy, you know.
Right, right.
He can be a starter if two other guys are injured.
I saw that Jeff Crisco liked him a lot.
Yeah.
I said that, like, his best work was improvisation when Caleb was rolling out or whatever. But, and I was like, oh, it's really cool. Like, he ends up getting open. But I'm like, wait a minute. It still took him, like, 8 seconds to do that.
Yeah.
That's not good. I love that he doesn't give up on a play, but I was thinking about this because I loved that about Roman Wilson too. And I think the difference between what Roman Wilson does and what Brendan Rice does is that Rice doesn't anticipate what Caleb's going to do. He just kind of follows what Caleb did, whereas Roman Wilson anticipated and made the plays on his own.
Yeah.
I thought he had good hands. I thought he was a good run blocker. I think he's got red zone threat potential going on there. I think he's a guy that ends up playing in the league for a few years as a depth boundary wide receiver with upside, but I think he has a long way to go in order to be a weekly contributor in the league. I compared him to Dontavian Wicks.
Okay.
Sounds good.
So yeah, if we're good on Brendan Rice, we could talk Jalen McMillan, because, man, I love me some Jalen McMillan.
I liked his tape a lot, but it seemed like 75% of it was just him running these freaking deep, long routes. And that's, like, good and everything, but he doesn't have, like, the speed to, like, keep that up. Like, his speed's there, but it, like, you know, he loses the tank real fast.
Oh, yeah.
And like, he's not the biggest guy either, so that could mean a lot of issues with coverage. But he's, like, going to be a really good deep threat, I think.
He's I only watched one game because I didn't have the time this week. But he's very bad in the zone setup. Like, every time I watch him in this clip of the Boise game, he would just straight up just... I mean, he probably was, like, the decoy in this offense for most of the time, but he definitely was, like, running straight to the linebacker as opposed to, like, hey, I'm going to get a little bit of the soft spot. He would just run right to the point of contact.
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, like, he was hurt this year, too, so I don't want to, like, my only 5 minutes of exposure to him be like, he's bad, but... I think from what I saw, it, like, kind of as Ryan was saying, he's, like, not a one or a two. He's kind of a flex player as of right now. But, I mean, like Walker was talking about, if he goes later, the higher chance that you get a value on a player like that is much better.
I'm going to be real with you guys. I love Jalen McMillan, and I think that he is a pure slot in the truest sense of the word. Like, he is a pure slot receiver. He is not going to line up outside. He is Josh Downs. He is Zay Flowers. He is the guy in the middle.
He had really great hands in the middle of the field. Yeah, I would agree with you.
Yep. So a lot of dudes that get put in the slot are put there because of, like, their size or their A dot. but I think he's like a true slot. He's a great route runner. I think he's got some of the best footwork in the class. His release is solid. His double moves are great. 2023 started off really good before he got hurt. Like, his first four games before he got hurt, or his first three games, was 8 for 95 and two touchdowns, 8 for 120 and a touchdown, and then 4 for 96 in the game he got hurt. And then he came in the Pac-12 championship and then played through the playoffs. But, like, he, first off, he's a fucking dog. But since he was, like, Penix's go-to guy in 2022 and 2023, at the same time, you've got Jalen Polk, who people are saying is, like, a top 100 pick in the NFL draft, and Roma Dunze, who people are saying is a top 10 pick in the NFL draft. For this guy to be the go-to tells me a lot about how reliable he is as a route runner and a playmaker.
Okay. Maybe a little like Adam Thielen vibes.
I count him to Tyler Boyd because I think, like, we think about Tyler Boyd as a short area slot guy, but he can also go deep, and he's shown that to us, where I think McMillan can also go deep. I mean, he runs a 4-4, but he's not a contested catch guy, but he can definitely stretch the defense.
Sure.
I said that if he didn't get hurt his last season, he would probably be a lock to be a second round pick. I just think, like, in the games that Jalen McMillan played, Jalen Polk didn't do shit because McMillan was the de facto two in that offense.
Okay.
How high are you on Jalen Polk? I don't remember. I remember we talked about him. We were both like, man, he's fine.
I like Jalen Polk. I think Jalen Polk's, like, actual ceiling is like a wide receiver two.
Okay. I mean, that's still really high. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Top 48 finish is still pretty good for someone who's like second rounder.
Polk's tape score to me is tied with, it's right around the same region as Javon Baker, who's not on our list, but you should watch. Ricky Pearsall, who's not on our list, but you should watch. Malachi Corley and Bad McHonkey. So he's right in that tier with for me. But okay. Everyone I know says that Ladd McConkey's wide receiver like 4 in this class, so apparently I'm the crazy one.
Yeah, so man, we all got preferences.
We're all crazy.
Some of us view JJ McCarthy as QB2.
Oh, God damn it. God damn it. All right, let's leave this place. Let's go to a good place. Let's go to a place that Ryan Edgecombe is about to introduce to us in his geography segment.
All right, guys. This week we're gonna go back to Charles Clay's hometown. We're gonna go to Little Rock, Arkansas.
There we go.
All right. There's not too much professional sports in Arkansas, unfortunately, but there are a decent amount of people from there, sports players and famous people. Let's see. It is the birthplace of what we now know as cheese dip. Did you guys know that?
Oh, shit.
And in fashion of being the birthplace of cheese dip, they also are the inventors of the cheese dog, you know, the dog with like cheese in the middle of it.
Big cheese culture down there.
I think there's a lot of diabetes in Little Rock.
I'm sure.
Let's see. Did you guys know that you couldn't do an autopsy on a corpse until 1874 in Little Rock? I don't know why. But you couldn't. I think it had something to do with religion. But
sure.
Little Rock has the oldest state capitol building west of the Mississippi.
Oh.
Yeah. When the Little Rock Zoo opened in 1926, they had two animals, a circus bear and a timber wolf. That's it.
That's awesome.
It is not one of the biggest zoos in the United States. Shocking.
They need three animals to be in that tier.
Believe it or not, I found this interesting. You would think it'd be more somewhere like on the coast, but they are the largest producers of rice in the United States. They produce over 9 million pounds of rice.
Huh.
And some actually gets shipped overseas. It's not just kept in surplus for America.
Wow.
In fact, I read that like China was like buying some. I'm like, why do you guys need to buy rice?
America number one, dude.
Yeah,
can't fucking beat us.
American rice, baby.
That's right. So the city gets its name from a small formation that marks a shallow crossing on the river that goes through the town. And it, they named it Little Rock. It was people travel on the river. It was a famous landmark, and that's what it. I don't know how you could see it. This is a little rock. Let's see. We have one of the most famous Harlem Globetrotters from Little Rock, Herbert Geese.
Okay.
Also, let's see. Little Rock Air Force Base is the largest training and maintenance facility for America's C-130 aircrafts. That's the Hercules aircraft.
Okay.
They're all kept in the center of the country because those are long-range aircraft, so they can travel 24 hours without having to fuel.
Okay.
You guys know, like, the brown and serve rolls they have at, like, you know, Thanksgiving and stuff like that? Those are invented in the 30s in Little Rock.
Okay.
Let's see. In 1885, you could get a free plow when you paid $12 for the Little Rock newspaper subscription.
Okay.
Well, $12, that's a lot in 1885. Who would pay that? But I guess you got a free plow out of it. President Eisenhower became the first president since Reconstruction to use federal troops to enforce civil rights during, Tony, what was that? Was the Little Rock Nine or something in the 60s?
Yeah. Yep.
Trying to end segregation. It was the first time that federal troops were used to enforce civil rights. Big moment in civil rights history happened in Little Rock.
Yeah, Jerry Jones was there, remember?
He was?
Yeah, dude, Jerry Jones was in the crowd of people yelling at the kids when they were coming into the school.
He didn't pour chlorine or bleach in the pool?
He's on my list of people from Little Rock. He was born out actually in California, but when he was really young, his family located to Little Rock to do whatever they were doing with oil.
Okay.
And eventually moved to Texas. Tony, you probably know this author, Elin Harris, basically considered the best-selling African-American novelist in the country.
E is the first name.
Elin Harris.
Yeah. Yep. She died, though, right? Did she die?
I'm not sure. They have what's known as the Arkansas Travelers. They're the AA affiliate for the Seattle Mariners.
Okay.
You guys all know the slogan, maybe it's Maybelline. Maybe yes. She's born with it. Maybelline is from Little Rock. Wow. Headquarters in Little Rock. World leader in cosmetics.
Small world.
Let's see. NFL referee Walt Coleman is from Little Rock, and he's famous for the 2002 Tuck Rule playoff game.
Ugh.
Yeah, I already started going into some people, so might as well get into some more people.
Let's do it.
Bobo Brazil, famous wrestler.
Okay.
Yeah. Little Rock. Let's see. The voice of Squidward from SpongeBob, Roger Bumpus.
No, cool. I'm in Little Rock.
Cool.
Drew Smeley, pitcher for the Cubs right now.
Okay.
It's from Little Rock. Brooks Robinson, a Hall of Fame third baseman for the Orioles from Little Rock. A really good tight end still playing right now. Can you guys take a guess? Hunter Henry is from Little Rock.
I was going to say Darren Waller. Damn it.
Looks like he's got a big rock for a head.
Who else we got? Sidney Moncrief, famous NBA player.
Sure.
We've got Chelsea Clinton and Bill Clinton, not Hillary Clinton, as we all know. Hillary's from Chicago.
Hill Dog, yeah, from the Burbs.
Yep. Douglas MacArthur, five-star general.
Yep.
Carlos Hitchcock. He was a sniper in Vietnam who has the most confirmed enemy kills. Now, if he's got this many confirmed kills, he's probably got four times more unconfirmed kills. He had 93 confirmed sniper kills.
Woof.
And that means that your spotter saw all those people die. And that's a confirmed kill. So I don't even want to know how many more people he killed.
Right.
Let's see. Jason Truby, the ex-guitarist for POD. Hell yeah. Jason White, the Green Day's backup guitarist.
Oh, the other guy? Hell yeah. I love the other guy.
Yep.
Every live show that Green Day plays, there's the other guy.
Yep. As I said earlier, Jerry Jones, and also Walt Coleman, the Tuck Rule referee.
What a coincidence.
I forgot another NFL player, a famous NFL player, actually, Darren McFadden from Little Rock.
Run DMC, yeah.
Yep. Who else we got? Bill Hicks, famous comedian from the 80s and 90s who died when he was super young from like pancreatic cancer or something like that. I think he was only in his 30s when he died.
Yeah, he was like a young 30s.
He was going to go places in comedy, but he's tragically passed away. And he was from Little Rock. His whole family's from Little Rock. Matt Besser.
Yeah.
You're from like Kids in the Hall.
Yep.
He's the guy with the real like nasally voice.
Yep.
Bobby Portis, basketball player right now.
Hawks looking good tonight.
For the Milwaukee Bucks.
There you go.
The lead singer of Evanescence, Amy Lee.
Oh, hell yeah. Good for her. Bring her to life.
Was she dead?
No, that was just the name of the
lyric.
Oh, no. I thought it was Wake Me Up. Sorry.
It is.
The most famous person in my mind from Little Rock is Mr. Judge Reinhold.
Oh, I'm shit.
Judge.
Hell yeah. Judge Reinhold's fucking, man, he definitely was an actor. I want to shout out Derek Fisher, NBA icon and hilarious teammate, wife fucker.
Hey, dude, he was my guy on like episode 35. So
yeah, Fish.
Oh shit, that's right.
And I'm also gonna call back to one of my episodes. Lawrence Phillips was from Little Rock, guy that they killed his cellmate in jail, but was also mad about woke culture. And he was playing like backlot football with some kids, and he got pissed and hit one of them with his car.
Dude, he for sure believes OJ is innocent.
Well, they're having a reunion right now. So, couple sister cities, no Japan.
Well, what? You know what? Maybe Japan has it right.
Okay, sister cities for Little Rock. Kaohsiung, Taiwan. Hanam, South Korea. Changchun in China. Check this one out. Newcastle upon Tyne.
Where's that?
England. It just sounded fancy.
The town of Newcastle?
Yep. And then Caxias do Sul in Rio Grande, South Brazil, and Scranton, Pennsylvania.
Wow, Scranton?
Scranton, damn. Pennsylvania is a sister city of...
That's where The Office was filmed.
The Office would have been better if it was filmed in Little Rock, Arkansas.
They probably did. It's probably cheaper than filming in Scranton. They made it look like Scranton.
All right. So we took a trip, talked our guys, talked our shit. We had a very long Darren Waller segment today.
Yeah.
If Darren Waller does play, what does he finish? Tight end what?
In points per game.
Sure. Let's bump his numbers as possible, high as possible.
He'll get hurt and probably only play half the games in the season, so end up like tight end 30 somewhere around there.
Oh, I was gonna say, like, if you were gonna say points per game, minimum games of 4, my guess was gonna be did not qualify.
Yeah, sounds right.
And it sucks because he's awesome. Darren Waller rules.
Yeah. I just hope that he doesn't wait until after the draft, because that's such an asshole move.
It's funny.
I would do it. If I'm getting paid less to play, if I tell you I'm done, I'm getting my fucking final paycheck, dog. Sorry.
Or if he does that, the Giants are like, fuck it, we're drafting Brock Bowers, and then they cut him right after the draft. They cut Waller after the draft.
Then they would be on the hook for that money, though. So,
well, this is his third year on that contract.
They paid him $51 million for 3 years, dude. Yeah. The Giants deserve every miserable thing that happens.
That's so bad. Oh, Shane's eyes lit up in a way that I've never seen before when he saw that contract number.
Well, if they do cut him, it's only $7 million in dead cap, but that's fucking crazy. Oh no, it was $51 million for the Raiders.
Okay.
I mean, obviously someone took it over, but like, Holy shit, dude! They paid him $20 million in 2022 to sit on the bench.
Yep,
you know what, dude? Anti-work fucking hero, Darren Waller. We salute you.
He had 72 targets and 52 catches last year and one touchdown. Good for you, dude.
Classic.
Fuck it. All right. Well, next week we'll get closer to draft and
it's our 420 special.
Our 420 special.
Oh,
so.
Hell yeah.
So we got plenty of shit to talk.
It takes, baby.
We're probably going to be talking really slow, though.
Yeah, it's going to be a heavy indica night. So thanks for coming by. We'll see you next week for our special episode. And go draft. We're going to do it. We're close. Good night.
Good night. Good night.
Lover of Derek Carr.